This is Indian Noir. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 12 of His Night Begins. Aman Godwane tore his eyes away from the eyepiece of the binoculars. He spat in disgust before glassing the scene of destruction again. In the rubble of the three buildings that had once existed in the pastor's sanctuary, he once again found the signs of Virat Nariman's deceit. Dummies dressed up in hay and metal pipes, made to look like gunmen guarding the buildings. A wry smile graced Aman's face.
"An oldie, but goldie," he said.
His anger had turned to amusement.
Aman had planned for treacheries like this. It was precisely why he was perched on top of a weather-beaten, flat-topped hill, a kilometer away from the kill zone.
"Ask the men to retreat and tell them to watch their backs," Aman said to his bodyguards.
No one responded.
"Sudish, are you deaf? Convey my message, lazy bones," Aman said.
Silence. A wind rose up in the valley and journeyed eastwards, caressing the scrubland and the hills that dotted the landscape. Aman felt its cold bite on his skin. That, and a tingling sensation which signaled imminent danger to his well-being. Aman turned slowly to find his bodyguards lying on the ground, paralyzed. Small needles stuck out of the sides of their necks. The shepherds who were loyal to the pastor were members of the Gumri tribe, whose ancestors had thrived on this land for thousands of years. They had farmed, hunted and domesticated animals successfully to preserve a peaceful way of life. But if war came knocking on their doors, they would use stealth and guerrilla warfare to butcher their enemies and make them rue the day they decided to aggress on the Gumris. A chief weapon of theirs was the blowpipe, which shot poison darts that could incapacitate or kill their enemies. Earlier that day, Virat had requested the shepherds to monitor the movements of strangers crossing into the area. Through a series of vocalizations that was only known to their people, the Gumris had tracked the movement of the fleet of attackers. When they reported the location of Aman Godwane and his posse to Virat, the hitman surprised them by requesting their assistance in eliminating the cartel boss's bodyguards with their ancient weapons. Silent and deadly, the blowpipes delivered their deadly payload to the vital nerves that saturated the neck region of the protectors. The men did not have a chance, and Aman looked upon their still forms in horror, not knowing what grand machination had felled them where they stood. Soon, beams of light from scores of steel flashlights lit up Aman's petrified face. They flashed in the darkness, like the fiery eyes of hellhounds that yearned to hold his personage in judgment.
out of the darkness and into the field of light cast by the torches, a muscular man emerged. The man had a shaved head and a slight limp, and as he moved closer, Amon noted that his left hand was in a sling. Recognition dawned on him. "Virat," Amon said, his voice slightly faltering. Virat Nariman walked up to his nemesis and fixed him with an intense gaze. The radio resting in the hands of one of the fallen bodyguards came alive.
"Boss, I think we are done here. We are waiting for you to come down and add the finishing touches. Boss?"
Amon was breathing faster. A tightness gripped his chest. Sweat poured down his forehead and seeped into the expensive Italian silk that adorned his frame.
"They are looking for you, Amon. You should be down there with them for the mop-up operations," Virat said.
Amon gulped in fear.
"Slight change of plans," Virat said. "Why don't you get on your binoculars and look back at the site of your handiwork? Gone."
Amon did as he was told. He turned and glassed the wrecked compound.
"Look at what we are going to do to your army," Virat said.
Amon shifted the lens away from the ruins and towards his armed men laughing and chatting amongst themselves, oblivious to the danger that surrounded them. Amon's lips were parched. He ran his tongue over them to offer some moisture, but his mouth had dried up. A man in a green leather jacket, floral print shirt, and jeans was the first to fall. He was followed by another. From the shadowy surroundings of the road, men with guns rose up from the tall grass, shed their camouflage nets, and fired an unceasing salvo of bullets at Amon's hired goons. Men who belonged to the house of the new Chennai king of Smugglers Town. The man Virat had called before devising the plan was Chettiar's son, Nilesh Chettiar, the new Lion of Bandra. A man desirous of revenge for what the syndicate had done to his father. A man who was dreaming big and wanted to take over the operations of the syndicate without the sex and drug trafficking components. Nilesh had jumped at the opportunity, and his desire to put an end to the cartel's reign was made manifest in the massacre that unfolded via Amon's eyepiece. Time had stopped for Amon. Guns popped rhythmically in metallic staccatos that mowed down the armed men who did not get a chance to retaliate. He could follow the traceries of fire as bullets left barrels and plowed through flesh.
"This is but a snapshot of what is happening to men loyal to you around the country," Virat said, as Amon looked on at the orgy of violence.
Amon's soldiers showcased shredded limbs, torn faces, and gory torso wounds. Blood sprayed in many directions and created a floating crimson mist that gave the butchery a ritualistic vibe.
This is the night you always feared. The night your reign comes to a bloody end. The night a new king is crowned, and the body of the former tyrant is offered up to the wolves. Virat said.
Amun tried to say something, but he could only manage a whimper.
Talking about wolves, did you know this is one of the largest habitats of the Indian wolf? The drought has left them starving, and I am told they're even feasting on other predators to satiate their burning stomachs,
Virat said. What are you going to do to me? Amun asked in a pleading voice.
Are you not another predator, Amun?
Virat asked. Two bulky bikers emerged from behind Virat and grabbed Amun's shoulders. They then carried him downhill. Amun let them bear him away. His bravado was shredded to its tiniest atoms. It had dissolved into nothing, and all he felt was the hollow embrace of hopelessness. His feet dragged on the gravel path, over rocks and grass, as he descended the hill. They stopped at the foot of the prominence. A Harley Davidson was parked in the bushes. The bikers grabbed a length of rope from near the motorcycle and bound Amun tightly, his hands tied firmly behind his back. One end of the rope featured a steel hook which they attached to the back of the motorcycle. They then approached Amun's body, which was lying face up, and took turns spitting on him.
This is for our brother Sartaj, they said.
It took Virat a few minutes to limp down the hill, and when he arrived, one of the shepherds who had helped kill Amun's bodyguards approached him and nodded. He was dressed in a brown tunic and red turban caked in dust.
Thanks for your help, Virat said. The man bowed deeply. The wolves, Virat asked him.
There, the man said, pointing to the east, near Shaitan's Rock. The beasts tend to congregate there. You cannot miss the place. Three peaks like fingers.
Virat heard a scream in the dark from the direction where Amun was resting. Virat thanked the shepherd again and walked towards the source of the scream. The two men who had bound Amun were now speaking to the pastor. The pastor held something bloody in his hand. The pastor turned to Virat and said,
I cut off his tongue. I hope you don't mind.
Virat nodded respectfully. I'm going to take this to my wife, the pastor said, bringing the severed tongue up to Virat's eye level. He is all yours. Virat removed his hand from the sling and moved it to gently gauge its mobility. He grimaced. It still hurt like hell. Ignoring the throbbing hurt, Virat climbed on the motorcycle and started it. He turned around and looked at the squirming, moaning body leashed to the vehicle.
Let's go for a ride, my friend, he said.
He rode the motorcycle through the bushland, dragging Amun Godwane behind him. He headed towards Shaitan's Rock, the headlight piercing the darkness and revealing spindly trees, ancient rocks, and the green glowing eyes of night creatures. Amun's struggling anatomy plowed into the sandy soil, and the earth returned the compliment by stripping him of his skin. Canis lupus palpus, the Indian wolf, was smaller than the Himalayan wolf and lacked its luxurious coat. What it lacked in size and strength, it made up in guile and speed. While the creature had been hunted to near extinction in other parts of India, where agrarian ventures conflicted with the laws of the jungle, here in the Badlands, the wolf remained a vicious force of nature. Virat left Amun's severely wounded body at the base of Shaitan's Rock, which featured three finger-like peaks that pointed accusingly at the night sky. It should have been pointing at the man who lay crying and severely battered at its base. The man who had turned Uncle Idia to ash and disrespected his remains was now covered in wounds, and shattered bones poked out of his flesh from being dragged behind the Harley. "I wonder if all the souls your ambition laid waste to cried pathetically like this in their final moments," Virat mused aloud. The contract killer breathed in the night air, and along with it the memories of the women who had died for his sins. Even in this painful state, Amun's eyes were searching the surroundings, as if he expected someone to rescue him from this sordid plight. Virat wondered who it was that Amun so eagerly awaited. "No one is coming to save you, Amun," Virat said. Virat could hear the padded footfalls of the wolves nearby. "Here in the Badlands, there is only the justice of the sharp teeth and vicious claws," Virat said. Amun snivelled. "The Indian wolf is a quiet thing, not as showy as its brethren from around the world," Virat said. "We are surrounded by them right now, and yet you wouldn't know." Amun tried to say something on the lines of, "Please save me. But I can detect their movement and scent, for I am like them. You are not the predator. You are the prey, Amun. Nature has cursed you with the bliss of ignorance. It will serve you well under this night sky," Virat said. Virat climbed back on the motorcycle. He cast a final glance at the author of all his pains. Virat heard a growl in the bushes. He growled back. The creatures responded with a sound that acknowledged Virat's authority, his dominion over the kingdom of death. He rode forwards slowly, so he could savor the sounds of the wolf pack rushing at the helpless villain and feasting on his flesh to satisfy their ravenous desires. The wolves tore at his bloody body with their sharp fangs and dug their talons into his wounds to scoop out juicy chunks of flesh. The atmosphere was filled with the primal music of snarls and growls and screams. Around the bloody kill floor, in the middle of the arid plains, flowers bloomed on cacti in joyous abundance. they cast their perfume into the air in celebration, like nocturnal priests of some heathen death cult. Virat relished the sounds and the scent as he rode on in the coolness of the night. On their journey to the border, Virat reflected on the goodbyes they had said earlier that morning, as Praveen expertly steered the Land Rover. The pastor, his wife, and the surviving bikers hugged and wished them well in front of the ruined, smoking remains of the sanctuary. Nilesh Chettiar's men had removed the bodies of Aman's foot soldiers and transported them to shallow graves in the middle of nowhere. Before reports of bullet-ridden, charred vehicles in front of the ruined compound that were blocking the road reached the police, the pastor and his team had decided to move on to a secret location where they would rebuild their shrine of hope. "It is in the mountains," the pastor had said. "A place which offers 360-degree views of the surrounding plains and gives us the advantage of altitude. I have been planning this for a long time. The church and the clinic will rise again. And up there, on God's mighty prominence, we will heal and serve people till our final breath." Virat thanked the pastor profusely for the sacrifices he had made for him and his son. "We have to thank you for dragging us out of the shadow of the syndicate. And now, in Nilesh Chettiar, we have a great patron and a protector. All thanks to you, brother. Now go. My contact will be waiting for you at Lothi," the pastor had said, placing an affectionate hand on the heads of both Virat and Praveen. "Go, brothers, go in peace, and may God look after both of you," he had said, signaling the beginning of an epic journey that would ideally take Virat and his son from India to Russia via Pakistan and Afghanistan. Presently, Virat sighed as he thought about the scope of the journey that lay ahead of them and glanced at Praveen in the driver's seat. Virat had driven for the first hour of their five-hour journey. But then Praveen expressed a desire to drive.
"The pastor has been teaching me. He said it'll help me focus on something else other than my urges," Praveen had said. "He even took me off-road driving. In half a day, I was able to drive up hills without breaking a sweat."
Virat was impressed with what he saw. Presently, he said to his son, "The pastor has taught you well, my son."
"This could be my profession," Praveen said.
"Why not? I mean, I'm stunned at how good you are," Virat said.
Praveen turned to smile at him briefly before turning his attention to the highway which stretched before them, just beyond a wavering wall of mirage. Virat looked at him with pride.
"Danger will always haunt us till we cross the border. If we are faced with a terrible choice. If you have to choose between my life and yours, I hope you will do the right thing," Virat said.
"I'm not sure I understand you," Praveen said.
"If I ask you to..."
Virat hesitated. He took in a deep breath and sighed.
"What is important is that you go on and meet Pastor Tharagan's contact at the border, no matter what happens to me. I want you to promise me that you will choose your life over mine, should the need arise.
But I...
Praveen said with the intention of lodging a protest. Virat raised a hand with an air of finality and said,
You will do as I say.
Yes, father, Praveen said.
That was the first time he had used the word, father. Virat smiled to himself.
I thought you wanted to kill me, Virat said.
Praveen looked at him sternly, and a few moments later, burst out laughing. Virat joined in on the laughter. A loud explosion interrupted the frivolity as spikes shredded the front tires of the vehicle. Praveen panicked and tried to straighten the Land Rover, but the wheels locked to the left and caused the back tires to wobble. Before they knew, the vehicle swerved to the left of the road and rolled down an embankment and came to a halt against a rock the size of a cooking gas cylinder. The front end crumpled slightly on impact, and the engine whined painfully. The collision had proved to be a lucky break, because beyond the rugged obstruction, the bank of earth, peppered with black rocks and dead trees, sloped down for miles before plunging into a ravine filled with sun-baked outcrops and skeletal remains of dead cattle. Virat's injured arm had popped out of the socket again, and he was rattled. Virat looked to his right and noted that Praveen was out cold. The teenager had banged his forehead against the steering wheel, and the top of his nose seemed broken.
Praveen! Praveen!
He called out to his son, as he shook him with his good right hand. Then, he noted movement in the rearview mirror. A man was making his way down to the vehicle. Could he be here to help? Virat wondered. As the figure got closer, it became clear to Virat that he was looking at the man responsible for their current plight. An old, familiar face. A brother-in-arm who Virat had bested on several occasions. The vicious dog that Aman Godwani had referred to.
Virat should have known.
He grimaced as he continued to shake Praveen.
Wake up, son! Wake up!
As the Nishachar made his way down the embankment towards his quarry, who was trapped in a damaged vehicle, vultures flew circles in the sky and cast their shadows on the ravine, which hungered for more skeletal offerings. They cawed and screeched as the scarred face of one of the most vicious contract killers in the world peered at Virat through the side window. The Nishachar assessed the shredded front tires and the dent in the bumper and said,
I can see my spikes did a number on your hopes and dreams, Mr. Virat Nariman.